money.
I think we need to start. I welcome you all in this functional committee, peaceful committee, coherent, cohesive committee. I greet you all. I greet members of the civil society. I welcome the department, which is without the minister. And the name will tell us why. The minister must know that. Because we, the fact that we keep on understanding, that understanding will not bring judgment. Any other
questions? Good morning, members. The Bandar stakeholders. I have an apology from one of the students who is not
managed to get what? I table the apology. Intro. The agenda is before us, honourable members, which I always discourage changing it, but unless the committee feels differently, who am I? I serve the collective. Can I take it that the agenda is adopted?
Okay?
Yes. Yeah? Thank you very much. Now, we go to deliberation and consideration. I'm being advised that today we're supposed to be dealing with AIDS. I think it was a technical misstep where we're supposed to have done this item we do today. We're supposed to have done it last week, considering the amendment and fight and check people for the common ground so that we can go to the AIDS. Now it is being proposed that we need probably this is an hour. Huh? 30 minutes tomorrow, just around lunchtime, to deal with this matter and get over in time. Remember we are dealing with the issue of time to release. This is an urgent intervention to do some kind of a limited relief. To do some kind of a limited relief in the system. So it means we must actually demonstrate that we are time conscious. So the technical unit accepts that they were supposed to have led us to do that last week. Well, sometimes they are oversight, not the other oversight. Yeah. So that is the position. Now we have the proposed amendment.
Can I apologize up front for tomorrow? My sister is in the workshop tomorrow, though, so I don't think I'll be part of the meeting with you about that.
Yes, they leave. released the technical processes of the entire committee. She reads that from those, what is supposed to be done by what time, and so on and so on. So I'm saying, in that expertise where she specializes, she must then come with options so that at the end of the meeting, we look at those options and check what time can we be together to deal with this matter. Is that okay? Right? In front of us at the moment are the amendments submitted by the department, which was presented last week, at the same time in response to submissions, which in general they were okay with that, only with the exception of the legal head of what unit is it? Okay, something we need to find one another on today. What the First Amendment is?
In terms of the order or the
three ones? In terms of the order, the three substantive amendments.
The first one is extended to empowering the Minister of Social Development with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance to make additional payments available for some of the grants based on certain criteria. That's the first thing.
In other words, to augment the tribe grant kit to take care of the amendment. Do I take that we are all in agreement with that? Yes. The second one?
The second one is to remove the reconsideration requirement from SASA so that grant applicants who are unable with SASA's decision can go directly to the independent tribunal for social assistance instead of first going through an internal reconsideration mechanism inside of SASA.
Can you repeat that so that we are clear?
So the second proposal is that the current requirement for grant applicants to first raise their objections to SASA's decisions not to give a grant. The current provision is that they must first approach SASA, and SASA has a 3-month period in which they must reconsider their decision. And after that 3-month period is exhausted, if the applicant is still unhappy, they must then approach the appeals tribunal. The amendment is saying, let's do away with that first step of requiring SASA to do reconsideration and go directly to the, allow the applicant to go directly to the appeals tribunal.
Okay. In other words, it shortens the whole process. Are we in agreement with that? Remember?
Yes.
Thank you very much. When you look at me like that, I'm not sure what I say. Say whatever you want to say.
So the first one is
that
the grant applicant
must first raise their objections to SASA's decision not to give
them a grant.
Okay, I've learned it. It's fine. The third amendment,
The third amendment is to change the organizational structure of the inspectorate from being a government department to being a government component instead.
Can you explain that again?
In the current formulation of the legislation, the inspectorate is envisaged to become a department. And we are saying it's not necessary for the inspectorate to become a department. It only needs to be a government component. It is a much smaller structure which is focused and has no policy-making type of responsibility. To be doing primarily investigations and audits and basically ensuring that SASA's grant payment system has integrity. So that function does not need to be done by a department. It can quite easily be done by government components instead. So the government component would share some of its resources with the Department of Social Development, resources such as financial management and procurement.
It's all right. Let me pose this question. The decision is not the instructor. How independent are they?
Thanks for your question, Chairperson. I see that actually it's too late into the explanation in chat. The inspectorate is meant to be an independent institution, which reports directly to the minister. It's independent in terms of its decision. So it would not report to the director general of the department.
Mm-hmm.
It would be.
Can the minister overturn the decision of the inspectorate?
Well, the inspectorate is not really a decision making institution per se. It will be doing investigations and those sort of things and advising the minister, not necessarily taking decisions that the minister will need to alter or not alter. In terms of the formulation of the legislation, I will ask you to add, but in terms of the formulation of the legislation, it's meant to be an external mechanism which is independent of both the department and SASA to make sure that the grant system is being implemented in terms of the legislation appropriately, the money goes to where it's supposed to go, and all of those things. And it's that part of going into SASA's internal mechanism and making sure that they are structured and they are operating according to what's intended in the legislation. But if you have peace in the sense of being not dependent on the department or not dependent on SASA.
Let me tell you a very important question. Can the minister stop them from accessing the record?
or besides any member of the inspectorate in the performance of his or her functions.
a person who contravenes subsection 1 is guilty of an offense. All other statements are called such sentences may be reasonably required for the protection of the interests of the independence, impartiality, dignity, and effectiveness of the inspectors in the settlement of these practices.
Now, if you look at section 25 with subsection 1 and link it and contrast it with subsection 4 together with subsection 5 of section 24. If you try to contrast those two, how then do we deal with 25 and all their subsections?
I'm reading this thing and then a colleague who might be able to assist me, I'm going to allow him to just deal with some of the sections.
Let me give you an example. Let me just give you an example. We'll come to assist. Brenda, we'll come to assist. To me, I'm not surprised. There can be a unit within the department that responds to the minister, but under certain circumstances, independent even of the minister. Give me a point. Let me give you an example. Public protector reports to Parliament. Parliament meets in the JSC to appoint a judge, but when they exercise their duty, they exercise the independence of Parliament. Although the other one is recognized by government. But we must clarify exactly what this independence means. I'll tell you why. I've seen it, even my party knows my board. I've seen executive dissolving functional board because the position is not here. We don't want something like that here. So that's why this independence. I know in terms of the constitution, ministers are executive authorities. So, but once you say an inspector must be independent, I want you to assist us. Let me tell you why. If you are only independent on the bureaucrat, but you are dependent on the minister, that might mean nothing. You are not dependent on the relationship the minister has with the department. So, no, he's not going to come to us, but the minister will put it out. Can you assist? Let's not be frank about it, so please clarify.
I won't claim to be a lawyer, but my understanding is that the section, the whole chapter on inspectors, all of the different laws need to be read together. So, for example, the clause that speaks to being directly answerable to the or directly accountable to the minister. Also says no person, if you look at the section 25, it says no person may in any way interfere with, hinder or obstruct any member of the inspectorate in the performance of his or her functions. And those functions are very clearly specified in the legislation. If you go to section 27, it specifies what the functions of the inspectorate are. So to the extent that those functions are protected by legislation, and clause 25 says no person may interfere with the inspectorate exercise of his functions.
Yeah, that's referred by a lawyer.
Yeah.
Let the lawyers explain.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, don't put your fingers on that. Let the lawyers explain that. Let me tell you, subsection 4 of 24 says, or subsection 5, it says, to enable the minister, listen to this, to exercise his or her final responsibility in terms of section 4. What are those responsibilities? Exercise final responsibility over the instructor. What does that mean? How do you exercise final responsibility over the instructor? Somebody must then explain what does final responsibility over the instructor mean. Is that the only way we can understand what you when you say anybody? Anyone. Can we understand? I don't want to blame you. You've done so well since last week. So don't do explain prayer things that you know they're friends to do. can lay on assistance. This is very, very important. These things, they die or live in the institutional arrangement. If you have not spread out the institution, you must always balance people with well-organized institutions. Can lawyers assist?
The way I understand the role of the minister.
You are?
Mr. Makar, from the office of the chief state law advisor.
Chief F, you are the right one.
The way I understand the role of the minister chief vis-a-vis the inspectorate is, I'll compare it to the responsibility that the Minister of Justice exercises vis-a-vis the NPA, exercising overall political responsibility over the inspectorate. So in its functioning, it should be independent, it should exercise the functions independently. But when it comes to political direction and policy, the minister gives political direction.
I'm not sure if I hear. Are you a lawyer too?
No.
I'm such a
camera.
Are you a lawyer, Lisa?
No.
What do you want to say?
I'm happy to be a lawyer one day.
Right, say, no? It's your meeting, remember. Say what you want to say.
Okay, because if I hear what he's saying, he's saying it's political oversight, similar to what the Minister of Justice plays over the NPA. So the Minister of Justice cannot overturn decisions by the NPA. I mean, that happens in a court of law. So previously, of course, the struggles we had is that some of the challenges that arose at SASA was directly because of the over-influence of the minister and the fact that there's no board. So now if we speak of an independent inspectorate, does it mean that the minister will not be able to influence any of its decisions in terms of its investigations or decisions that it makes? Only, so I think we need to clarify exactly what specifically her role will be. So it must be defined in the Act. The minister will be responsible for X, Y, and Z in terms of her function. Because if you don't clarify it, it means that maybe tomorrow we'll wake up and then the minister will be able to exercise undue influence over SASA, which I think is not what we envisage happening here.
Can we do this? Can we ask you, little people understand now what you ask you. Now in Kenyana and I think the point is clear. Subsection 24 speaks of the responsibility of the minister over the inspector. It must be clarified in no uncertain terms. What does that mean? And further reassure us, how does it affect the independence as articulated in section 25? If those two things are clarified, we can then take a position. But it needs first ours to take a decision from the policy perspective, but we must be convinced that the policy decision we take is not messed up with the technical legalities. So can you, as we proceed, apply your mind as well? Don't give us your off-the-hip interpretation. So the question is clear. I read the answer.
The question is clear, so that what we might have to clarify is how we respond to the question of the second question of Bandar. So we would not ask for your indulgence to consider as the issue of the clarification of the role of the minister.
All what we want to check is that the kind of final responsibility that the minister exercised over the inspectorate have got an acceptable relationship with the independent as articulated in section 25. We don't want an inspector who says, I tried my best, but the minister could not allow me. Show us how that aspect is protected here. Well, reporting to you in terms of in executing his or her function, ideally must be independent of anyone in the department. Well, if it's only the department, not the minister, it might lose the minister. So can you guys assist us as we process? That was the second amendment, am I right?
Huh?
Those are the
three.
That was the last?
Those are the three. The other
definition. Yeah, we are done with those. Now let's come to the issue of, can you repeat that one, who asked the instructor? Because there was a view. Remember, there was a discussion whether it's a lawyer. That's it. So let's state that.
The proposal from,
okay,
in terms of the legislation,
it
says a grazing tariff.
It was a proposal by one of the who is
one of the
proposals
was that we should rather have the leader or the head of the inspectorate be a retired
judge. Yeah.
That's
out of your head. We'll do the committee now. What if you need to discuss, because that it's a material issue to either agree or disagree upon. Up front, some of us are proposing that if you have a judge available, so be it good. But don't make it an essential what you call requirement. Because you might have people who are able to do that who are not judges. And the second point is that there was a response here by the department. There are a number of deployments in other aspects of that, forensic or whatever. It's well disposed with legal, what you call legal expertise. So in other words, the legal service is well catered for in the unit. Am I right? Yeah. But we need to agree whether we say head should be a retired judge or not. I personally have a view that is not necessary, but let me hear that the committee. It's a general thing to say the chair.
In terms of that issue, I think there will be some legal implications, for lack of a better word, of a retired judge who will come and head the inspectorate. I am not a lawyer, I cannot explain it properly, but I think to be careful, we should refrain from that. We should avoid having, because last week I was for the having a retired judge within the board heading the inspectorate. But after a lot of research and help from some legal people, I realized that that could implicate us in a very implicate the inspectorate in a negative way in terms of the legislature and judiciary of the retired judge. So maybe we should look at it in a different way now and see if we cannot do it without a retired judge in the inspectorate.
In other words, we don't say you don't want a retired judge. But you must not say we cannot hire you in that on condition that you are retired. What may I put in that?
No, I think one of the
items of the
form.
Okay. So, in other words, we support the departmental proposal. Okay. Yes?
Just one comment. We're debating whether this person should be a retired judge or not, but we don't yet know what the criteria and qualifications are going to be asked of this person. So, What is the person's qualifications of who's going to eat up this inspected?
I'm not sure if politicians want to get involved in those technicalities. All what we need is a competent person. But all what we are avoiding from putting in a legal requirement to have a retired judge, surely somebody who is in that position must have qualifications. Qualifications that make him or her competent to execute the task that go with that position. Can you give it that? So in other words, repeat what you said, Brenda. And it's not essential one.
I was saying if it is possible to find on a person, it's fine, but it's not essential. Don't the requirement
okay.
of the legislation. The other thing is the key requirement would be someone who is fit and proper. And the key legal definition of what is fit and proper.
Well, you have said something legal that is correct this time.
I wonder what is what is the necessity of mentioning a retired judge? Because for me, the overriding factor would be a person is fit and proper. So in my mind, even a human rights activist or a human rights lawyer would be fit. So I would even leave out the reference to retired judge and just say a person who is fit and proper and has the interest of our grant recipients at heart. Something, I'm not a lawyer, but I don't think it would be an overriding factor that the person would need to be a retired judge, and maybe would want to leave that out.
Well, I agree.
Yeah.
Fit and proper is the key word.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will. So, remember, can you give me all these other amendments? Let's give you all the amendments.
Just to contest so that we have in our record that all the amendments is introduced by the department, the committee in support of. For example, I would start with a long title. If the members have other views, which reads as follows. The bill is to amend the social assessment bill, amend assistance act 2004, so as to insert new definitions to provide for additional payments linked to social grants, to provide for payment of benefits to a targeted household, to provide for social relief of distress in the event of a disaster, to repeal the internal reconciliation process, to provide for an independent tribunal, to consider appeals against decision of the agency, to provide establishment of the inspectorate as a government component, and to provide for matters connected thereof. Next to the airways, I just want to ascertain whether the committee are in agreement of the
yes.
title of the bill.
Yes. Give us a thing of the discussion. Yeah, that's summarized in that manner now. Are we in agreement?
We.
Okay. You must say prayer, something. Say something.
Anything.
Yes.
Yay. Thank you. Yes. There are some amendments proposed. Line 9 and the disaster, and to after. To put the disaster management act to explicitly put the act that has been referred to after the disaster act management to insert 2002 act number 55 of 2002. So the previous act didn't contain such act. So the proposed amendment to put the exact act that has been referred to.
So the members have copies of the bill and different things. And what we are doing now, members, is that capture where members want us to go and make committee amendments in the form of the AD. So we are in
initially an amendment list.
Is an amendment that is going to come from the committee now of what the committee thinks should be amended in the bill and different things.
Let's listen carefully.
The procedure. That's to explain the procedure to honourable members. The procedure at this stage, members, is after you've received the departmental briefing, the public input, as well as the responses of the department and the public input, the next step is for honourable members to then look at the bill as was introduced, consider the public input and the response received by the department, and suggest proposals for amendment of the bill to incorporate that which members want to be incorporated in the bill. Those are the amendments that we will capture, which will then be known as the A list, which is the list of amendments as proposed by the committee to the bill. We will go and draft the A list, present it to the committee in a formalized manner, and then the committee will then mandate us to go and do the B version of the bill, which will be the bill as introduced, incorporating those changes that the committee has proposed. That's the thing that then gets us accepted by the committee as the final thing, the chairperson. So at this stage, the committee is considering its proposed change.
which change we will catch in the form of the A list, subsequent to which then we'll present to the committee the A list in the next meeting, and also present the B version or B bill, which is the bill that incorporates the proposal of the committee. So what the DDO are getting now is the B as indicated, to which members will then propose changes, which changes will catch in the form of the A list or committee amendment. Thank you, sir. I think the point is that an amendment didn't have been tabled. And areas of amendments have been clarified. We've dealt with what we call main substantive issues, not definition. But when you deal with A list, you will deal with everything that has been amended, no matter how minute it is. Things I thought were not highly worried about. But when we meet in that meeting, whether it's 30 minutes, we'll look at the total list of amendments, no matter how much it is, so that the committee can say, indeed, these are the amendments we have identified. Once that is done, a final bill proposed and amended is going to come for committee to consider for processing. Are we together? Yes. So I would say, that is where we are now. And then that A list will be considered when we meet in that 30. Is it that quick? Okay. You want to make a vote?
Yes, Chair. When we met the technical team, taking into account the request from members that they will be able to attend the scheduled meeting tomorrow. So we just proposed that we shift the A list, concert of A list, to next week's meeting, which would be the first agenda item. And we propose that instead of starting our meeting at 10 o'clock, just be earlier with 30 minutes and start our meeting at 9:30 next week, Tuesday.
So that keeps us within the time frame. Are we okay? So, Tuesday, yes? Yeah. Can I say so far we are done on the bill? If we finalize issues on Tuesday. Yes. 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 All right, madam.
I just want to there's something that has been at the back of my mind that I wanted to ask the chair and the department with regards to this bill. It was mentioned during the presentation of the organization that came here that while this bill is good to help with the situation that we have now, there are aspects of it that may not work or that may be sabotaged by the fact that there is another bill that needs to change or to be amended for this bill to work. I don't know when the right time to raise that is, which is why I'm raising it now, so that I am cleared and given confirmation that that's not the issue. It's what we have the legal people and the department in the room. Thank you, Chair.
You wanted to say something, sir?
Yes, on what you were saying, sir, I'm just concerned that you're saying we done with the proposed amendment now. My concern is that I would rather we go through the proposed amendment and the committee take a position on each amendment so that we know.
That's a technical thing. You're supposed to read that for technical purposes. We're supposed to read yourself. Yes. We are being advised. We must be no legal missteps here. We are being advised to go step by step, right? Are you ready? Who's going to do it? Then I want the legal person to do it. So I didn't know I'm sharing when I read. and I throw it there, just for saying. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I will start with the First Amendment, in the proposed amendment of the Local Assistance Amendment Bill. And I will read it out, Chairperson, to the members, so that the members can indicate where they need us to make a change or make or take a position on the proposed amendment. So it's amendment.
What agrees in front of you?
Okay. So it's the amendment of Section 1 of the Act. It should be amended. It says amendment of Section 1 of the Act 13 of 2004, as amended by Section 99 of Section 35 of 2008. Of Act 35 of 2008. Section 1. Section 1 of the Social Assistance Act, the principal act, is hereby amended by the insertion after the definition of disabled person of the following definition. Disaster. So this is the addition, disaster. It means disaster is defined in Section 1 of the Disaster Management Act. Disaster Management Act means the Disaster Management Act 2002 or Act 57 of 2002. That's A. The B of that amendment is by the insertion after the definition of grant in aid of the following definition. Independent tribunal means the independent tribunal appointed by the minister is contemplated in Section 18(1) of the Act. C. By the insertion after the definition of parent of the following definition. Person. To define, for the purpose of social relief of distress in the event of disaster, means the head of the household or anyone within the household acting on his or her behalf or an organization rendering disaster relief services. And D. By the substitution for the definition of social assistance of the following definition. Social assistance means a social grant, social relief of distress or an additional payment contemplated in Section 12, Capital A. Okay.
That is Section 1. Are we okay?
Yes.
Are we fine with the amendment in Section 1? Thank you very much. Let's go to Section 2. Yes?
No, I'm not supposed to
understand,
I'm not a member.
No, you're here to technically assist.
We're supposed to say, because this is a UN language, I think you went referring to persons, supposed to persons with disabilities.
Persons is fine. Alright. We are okay. Let's go to Section 2.
So Section 2. Amendment of Section 4 of the Act is clause 2 of the amendment bill, which is followed. Section 4 of the principal act is hereby amended. A. By the substitution for the heading of the following heading. Provision of social assistance. The remote granted in that assistance. B. By the definition of deletion, of end, at the end of paragraph F. The substitution of the expression end for the full stop at the end of paragraph G and the addition of the following paragraph H, social relief of this full stop.
Are we okay?
Yeah.
And that is section 2. Section 3?
Clause 3 of the bill, which is the substitution of section 6 of Act 13 of 2004, read as follows. The following section is hereby substituted for section 6 of the principal act. Child support grant. This is the following. 6. Subject to section 5, a person who is the primary caregiver of a child, semicolon, or B, a child who has a child-headed household, as contemplated in section 137 of the Children's Act, the age of 2005, is eligible for child support grant.
Are we okay? Next section.
Clause 4 is with the intention of section
2. Well, agreed on clause 3, am I correct?
Yes.
We go to clause 4.
Clause 4 of the amendment, which deals with the intention of section 12, capital A, in the Social Assistance Act, section of 2004, is as follows. The following section is hereby inserted in the principal act after section 12. That section is titled additional payment. 12, capital A reads, the minister, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, may prescribe an additional payment linked to a local grant. Two, the minister may, in prescribing an additional payment, differentiate on the basis of needs between the beneficiary and the social grant.
we agree to clause 4?
Agreed.
Clause 5? Clause 5 should be concluded with the constitutional section 13 of the Total Act of 2004. It reads as follows. The following section is hereby substituted in section 13 of the Principal Act, titled Social Relief of Distress. 13 reads as follows. Any person is, subject to section 5, eligible for social grants, social relief of distress if the person qualifies as prescribed. Notwithstanding subsection 1 and sections 27, 41, and 55 of the Disaster Management Act, any person may qualify for social relief of distress if he or her household has been affected by a disaster. 3. The agency must, subject to subsection 1 and 2, disperse the social relief of distress as prescribed. 4. Notwithstanding subsection 2, the agency may, in the event of a disaster and depending on the magnitude of the disaster and the availability of resources, determine as prescribed the needs of the affected communities and disperse the social relief of distress.
That is clause 5, all of the members, now we agree. Thank you. And?
Just a quick question, the Disaster Management Act, that's quoted there, are there time frames attached to by when the social relief of the state needs to be paid out? Is that in that act? I'm unclear if it is, that's what I'm asking. The time frame by when it needs to be dispersed, yeah.
Normally, when you deal with such responses, but the legal people will assist. It has to be done within reasonable logical, reasonable time. It's always difficult to say within a day or within a week. But there must be something called reasonable. And reasonable at any material time is determined by the circumstances of that particular situation. But we cannot say it must be a week. Only the companies don't know. Because the companies don't develop, I know that they need to. So what is the point now?
Maybe I'll just go read the Disaster Management Act. I just want to know if there's a time frame.
Somebody read that one, I think. But if you say you are suspending your
somebody.
Okay. When you say 011, you must answer, maybe I'm always somebody. When you need a cell phone, I don't know. Sometimes the police want you to sacrifice. Sacrifice, you never know. I remember, what worries me is that what we are discussing now. If I'm listening to Oragungwanya, what you are raising must be accommodated. If you've got, there's an area where you are not sure, you can say you are not sure, but we'll actually assess whether the community in general is not for me. And then you can come at a later stage, even what if we do on Tuesday, or in between, send something to the technical team, and then the committee can look at it. Can we leave it that way? Yeah. So, where I'm sitting is that, generally, Honorable Abrams, and I want to repeat this, it is not, it's not possible to know exactly when there's a disaster. How many days must it take before you intervene? That's not possible. Because any disaster has got its own uniqueness. Another disaster might need an intervention within a day. Another might need hours. Another one might tolerate 2 weeks. I've been in disaster with the mayor. Some would wait for 2 months, certain things get organized. They would actually afford that period. So all I'm saying is that within the reasonable time. But reasonable time was never one. Courts are very good in that. Courts can, after reasonable time, courts go and analyze the contents of that disaster. And they're able to say, no, you were not making threats at that time, so you didn't do your work on time. Even if the exact time frame is not there. That's how brilliant the legal discipline is. So we will get taken care of, yes?
I thought it's worth stating that disaster management in the country is governed by the Disaster Management Act, not this legislation. The social relief of distress provision is not only for disaster, it's for all sorts of other types of distress that households might be experiencing. So this clause is really about trying to harmonize the extent to which social relief of distress might be added to disaster intervention. And it's not the primary aim of this legislation to deal with disaster. So
no,
it's really just harmonization.
No, that is also helpful. Thank you very much. Let's go to clause 6.
Clause 6 deals with the amendment of Section 14 of the Act, so we can address and follow. Section 14 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution in subsection 3b for subparagraph 3. Of the following subparagraph. 3. Of his or her right of appeal contemplated in section 18 of the Maternity Law Procedure to invoke such rights. So this amendment removes the highlighted words in self-righteous.
The highlighted one is being removed.
Yes, to request the reconsideration and his of the right, and it also removes any, which is also.
Are we okay with that amendment? Thank you, our member. That is clause 6. We'll go to clause 7.
This clause 17 is the amendment of section 18. The following section is substituted for section 18 of the Principal Act. So that the new section 18 of the Act now. It has an appeal against decision. Against decision of agency. It reads, the minister must appoint an independent tribunal comprised of appropriately qualified persons, as may be prescribed, to serve as members of the independent tribunal, to consider appeals against decisions of the agency contemplated in subsection 2 in the prescribed manner. 2. If an applicant or a beneficiary disagrees with the decision of the agency in relation to an application contemplated in section 14, that person or a person acting on his or her behalf may, within 90 days of the decision being made, lodge a written appeal with the independent tribunal in the prescribed manner. 3. The appeal contemplated in subsection 2 must set out the reason for the appeal against such a decision and why the independent tribunal should vary or set aside such decision. or make any other decision which is just. Four, the independent tribunal must, upon receipt of the written appeal contemplated in subsection 2, request the agency to provide the reasons and all relevant records which informs the decision to the independent tribunal. Five, the agency must submit the reasons and all relevant records to the independent tribunal in the prescribed manner. Six, the independent tribunal must, upon receipt of the reasons and all relevant records contemplated in subsection 5, consider the appeal and may confirm, vary or set aside the decision of the agency or make any other decision which it can. Seven, notwithstanding subsection 2, the independent tribunal may, in the prescribed manner, condone any late lodgement of an appeal.
That's clause 7 of the members. Where I grew from the Melville or the Abraham in that order?
Two questions. Firstly, I don't know what I'm going to ask you now is relevant, but we are the oversight committee of SASA in the Department of Social Development. At Parliament, we appoint boards, whether it's ICASA or SAPC or whether. So should it not read to protect the independence of this independent tribunal, should not say Parliament must appoint an independent tribunal? Because you see, the risk is I might wake up tomorrow and then I'm the minister and then I've got an independent tribunal and I appoint my brother, my sister, my friend, my best friend, my aunt, and then that's the tribunal. Not that I'm saying anybody will do that. I'm just saying that we are the oversight authority over SASA and this department. Yes, Parliament is routine that committees that are oversight committees do appoint boards and other bodies. So I would want to argue that maybe to protect the independence of this independent tribunal, that the appointing body, as contemplated in 18.1, should be the minister must appoint, the parliament must appoint an independent tribunal. Also in this section, are we going to elaborate on the roles and responsibilities of the minister in the next draft? I'm just asking a question. But I think otherwise, for me, in my mind, if we talk about, then we must move away from an independent tribunal, then we must just call it a tribunal. Because once you give the sole discretion to the minister to appoint what in fact is a board, you remove its independence. When you bring it to Parliament, it becomes an oversight responsibility of this committee to appoint an independent tribunal. I would argue it would be independent. Because we would be looking at people who are suitably qualified. If I was a person who had ulterior motives and I ascend to office as minister and I really need to give work to my extended family, I could use that as an opportunity to appoint anyone. So that is my submission for now. I don't know what other people would say
about
that. I'm going to read my prayer next.
What
are we? So, Chair, in agreement with my colleague next to me, made a suggestion that the minister in consultation with the portfolio committee.
How often do you have usually your projects? Not only in this department. Yeah, only by minister.
Yeah.
You see, the point I'm making is that, sorry. You know, for instance, I know this is important, very important, but if the law says independent tribunal, I guess all of them need independent of what? Like it is articulated there in the, what is this? In the inspectorate. Do you have a problem when they say appoint independent tribunal? Or remember they don't discuss among the fellow character. But it is a woman. Not the group talk. Or a good banner, or a good. Hey, from the number of coming in.
No.
So you're taken care of.
Yeah.
All right. Or a good banner, or a good, or a good talk. Any other. Honorable Masango, any other director? What is this?
I'm looking at people who are from the street fair. Yes, it's honorable, honorable dog, honorable Masango. Okay, yes, yeah. Because people, that is where your role comes in. Yeah, you know?
Can we agree that we disagree with the honorary member behind? Reason for saying that the minister has got a responsibility at the end of the day, and we have to trust them. If they are given a function to perform, we must have it. Because what I know is that when they appoint these independent bodies, they come and report to us at the end of the day. So why do we have to change it now? For if I may ask, why do we have to? So I think the way it has been put, the minister must give her or his function and perform that. If there is anything, always comes back to the parliament.
I wanted to convert it just a little bit differently and say I also disagree with the proposal that must change this thing of minister to parliament, because of, if we are not careful, this thing of trying to bring everything to parliament, we might end up delaying service delivery in terms of what needs to happen in this. That's the first issue. And then secondly, I also want to indicate to the portfolio colleagues that let's not try to do things differently as if we're the first committee in parliament in the next administration that appoints or that is in the process of appointing an independent tribunal. Now we want to create an impression as if this tribunal is going to be there and then it's the first one appointed by social group. So I'm cautioning honourable members that let's take the approach, let's take the advice, the proposal is there, because this minister leading social development is not the last minister of social development. We are going again maybe to have another minister, maybe the sixth administration, maybe the seventh administration and so forth. So let's not create precedents that are going to make us to be stuck, because of we want to create rules for certain people who are in this position. Let's create a rule that says, let's go with this proposal. Whoever the president appointed as a minister must have those powers, it's the powers of the minister. And I like the proposal of Mavana that says, if there's a problem, the report will come to us in the portfolio committee. That's a left shot.
I just want to, in agreeing with what Honorable Pandeva raised, to say that also, as members of the committee, we must, in looking at this bill, we must use the experience that we have had. Because I believe it is with hindsight that some of the things can be corrected so that we don't face similar problems in the future. And I'm saying that because if we agree that the parliament is the one that is going to be appointing this independent tribunal, we are actually freeing the minister from being, we are freeing her or him, whoever, in whatever parliament it is, from being looked at as having had any influence in that tribunal. So the minister would be free of any I don't know what, in the future. And also, my biggest point, Chair, that I wanted to make is that we are doing this because of experience. When these acts were passed into law in the past, the experiences that we had in the last years had not happened. So let us use that experience to make sure that we do the right thing when we have an opportunity like this to actually amend the sections of the act. Thank you, Chair.
You want to come back?
I just wanted to say, these are platforms different in the way we raise our opinions. Our opinions might not be acceptable to others, but it's in no way trying to reinvent the wheel or trying to agitate members. I was simply giving my proposal, which is free to be shot down by a committee, but I don't think it's fair then to say that you know, one has got ulterior motives. I was merely, and I think in my introduction I said I'm not even sure whether it's a relevant point, but it was something that I felt needed to raise.
Then that will satisfy the argument which I had, that we should, you know,
thing is the way the it's currently written, which says the minister must appoint, but then the minister must appoint in consultation with or after consulting the views or the inputs of the portfolio committee. That will strengthen our oversight role so that we can then make sure that suitable people are appointed. Then it's still her discretion, but at least we consult it. And I think that's a middle ground.
Let me put it this way. I wish we could find one another on this. Not that we have to agree every minute to entire life with everything. But I was enjoying this. I'm so used to it now. I'm spoiled. Where I'm sitting, either way it goes, what amount is the tax in what we call in Holland? Whether you are going to be parliament appointing, you still need the tax in Holland. Whether it's a minister, you still need. Actually, the problem in South Africa is not who appoints who. It's how we exercise accountability. And all must get done. I remember at the risk of being misunderstood, when Judge Mukwege was going to be appointed, I remember the debate that went all over South Africa that no, Judge Mukwege belongs to a particular. But once he started doing his work, the entire country loved him. And what was key in Judge Mukwege is it's not the perceptions that people had about it. It's how neutral he was going to exercise his responsibility. That's what it is. And so all I'm saying is that there's a number of other considerations we must make, for instance. Where I'm sitting, I want to ask myself, is that, does this committee want to be involved in itself in appointment of so many things? Isn't there a check and balance that can satisfy the committee to make sure that they're independent? That does it mean when the minister appoints, there are no mechanisms of ensuring transparency, independence, and so on? Can we? What I'm showing these questions, it might not be difficult for us to force ourselves to agree today on this question. We may, what is my mind over it? What is my over it? To me, I don't want to die for either way. All what I'm dying for is accountability. Accountability. And I can tell you where I'm doing oversight, whether you can appoint your 20 aunts, if accountability is done by me, you might not get whatever you promised your aunt if I'm responsible for accountability. Yes, ma'am.
I'm not offering an answer, but I think it's worth explaining how the tribunal currently functions and how it's appointed currently, so that enriches the consideration, the money over that the portfolio committee wants to do. Currently, the way it happens is that the minister advertises for members of the tribunal. An open advert that goes out. And two key qualifications are required because of the nature of the appeals that we generally get. Most of them have to do with disability. So the panel that is appointed has to have medical expertise and legal expertise. And those people that are appointed are not permanent. It's not like a permanent structure of a tribunal in that sense. But it is people who get appointed to address appeals as and when they occur. So
this is all about that.
They hear a couple of appeals that we have a 90-day period in which you must deal with the appeal. So when you have sufficient appeals that have arisen, we then convene the tribunal. And the tribunal currently comprises actually 19 medical doctors, professionally qualified medical doctors who are working as medical doctors. They only come to the tribunal to hear those matters even when they arrive. And then 19 lawyers. So, as the appeals happen, they then get allocated the cases. They say, these are the appeals, can you come and adjudicate them? And they come, they adjudicate the cases, they make their rulings, and then the rulings get communicated. So that's how they're currently functioning. It's even when appeals occur that they come to speak. But they're not like a permanent structure that is there forever. And they are appointed for a period of 3 years, which is then renewed for another 3 years. That's the current structure of the tribunal. So in those full-time positions, it's people who are working in the field, medical doctors and lawyers. That is the current structure. And I think it's important to consider that in thinking about how Parliament then wants to engage with the formulation that you are now coming up with. But the primary thing is they are appointed by the minister, they are paid on a case-by-case basis that they deal with, and we have to rotate them to make sure that if there's only 10 accused, we have 10 9 people who obviously will not find all 9 of them for the cases. So it's on a case-by-case basis that they deal with it. And then after 3 years, they can apply for reappointment or not.
Okay. Yep. My friend.
Thank you very much, Chairman. If only if, as these members of this committee, we can do our oversight properly, I don't think there is something that can happen. I trusted these men and women in this committee. Thank you.
Can we agree that? Let's not finalize this matter now. Let's go to 8, 12, 8. Generally, the clauses are agreed except that subject to finding one another, if we do. Clause 8, clause interpreted and provided for the amendment of Section 24 of the Act is read. Section 24 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A, by the substitution of subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1, it removes there. And read, there is an inspectorate for social assistance which must be a national government component contemplated in section 723 of the Public Service Act and established in accordance with section 75C of that Act. And B, by the deletion in subsection 5 of the word and at the end of paragraph A, the substitution for the full stop at the end of paragraph B of the expression and the addition of the following paragraph C, furnish him or her with recommendation with regard to any matter relating to the function of the inspector of full stop. Are we agreed on the clause? Clause 8? Thank you, honorable members. Clause number 9?
Clause 9, Chair, amend section 29 of the Act, is read. Section 29 of the principal Act is hereby amended. A, by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph A of the following paragraph. A, delegates to a staff member or any officer of the department any power delegated to him or her in charge of subsection 1A. B, by the inserting of subsection 2 of the following subsection, 2A, the executive director may, in writing, may delegate to a staff member or any officer of the inspectorate any power conferred upon the executive director by the Act. B, authorize a staff member or officer of the inspectorate to perform any duty which he or she has been authorized to perform by this Act or in terms of subsection 1B. And C, by the substitution of subsection 3 of the following subsection. 3, any person to whom a power has been delegated or who has been authorized to perform a duty in terms of subsection 1, 2 or 2 capital A must exercise that power or perform that duty subject to conditions determined by the person who affected the delegation or granted the authorization. Full stop.
That is clause number. Are we agreed in clause 9? Okay. Member, thank you. Clause number 2.
Clause 10, Chair, amend section 32 of the Act is read. Section 32 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A, by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph A of the following paragraph. A, the application for and payment of social assistance, semicolon B, by the substitution at the end of subsection 2C for the full stop of a semicolon, by the substitution at the end of substitution 2 for the full stop of the semicolon. And the addition of the following paragraph. See? Additional requirements or conditions in respect of requirements contemplated in section 2, section 12, capital A. And see? Differentiation on the basis of needs between beneficiaries of social grants as contemplated in section 12, capital A2. And see? By the addition of the following subsection 3. The minister, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, A, must determine amounts payable with respect to social assistance, and B, may determine additional payments due to social grant by noting the letter of the
After all
the
adjustments, are we agreed? That's clause number 10, clause number 11.
Clause number 11 shall provide for transitional arrangements, level 1. For the purposes of this section, unless the context indicates otherwise, any word or expression in which a meaning has been assigned in the Social Assistance Act of 2004 has the meaning assigned to it in that act, and this act means the Social Assistance Amendment Act 2018. 2. Notwithstanding the amendment in section 14(3)(b)(3) of the Social Assistance Act 2004, by section 6 of the Act, which repeals the reconsideration provisions of the agency must reconsider any application received for an applicant, beneficiary, or person acting on his or her behalf in relation to a decision which was made by the agency before the commencement of this Act. 3. The agency must reconsider any application contemplated in subsection 2 within 90 days of the said law. 4. If an application for reconsideration contemplated in subsection 2 was not lodged within 90 days of the date of the decision of the agency during grant application or review, such applicant, beneficiary or person acting on his or her behalf must lodge a new application for social grant with the agency. 5. An appeal contemplated in section 18 of the Social Assistance Act of 2004 in respect of a decision made by the agency during a grant application or review after the commencement of this act must be lodged directly with the independent tribunal. That's it.
Are we agreed to transitional arrangement?
Yes, sir. Just to propose that in subsection 1, we just change the
principle. Subsection 1
of that clause.
All of this clause, okay.
Of clause 1, the 2018 would be 2020 now.
Okay. Can you explain that?
The year of the act usually is in the year that it passed, so we are assuming that because we're in 2020 it will probably pass this year.
Agreed to 11 to 12.
Most of the social chair and also when the comments were delivered, the act is called the Social Assistance Act of 2018 now to 2020. And take effect on the date fixed by the president by proclamation in the Gazette. 2. Different dates may, under subsection 1, be so fixed in respect of different provisions of this act.
Wait with me. Maccabee.
Yeah.
I would like to think that this act was once at some stage intended to be. Originally, it's Act number of which year is
it? The Act is the 2004 Act, but the bill was the 2018 bill. So it's a bill that was introduced in 2018.
The one we are dealing with now?
Yes.
That's exactly the one we want to come to. Can you hear that? 19, 20, for 2 years. But who has to be parliamentarian who has not paid during that year? Who has to be parliamentarian who has not paid? But the nation was not fair. Yes, sir.
In all fairness to members, say there were also elections in Argentina.
No, Okay, my colleagues. What I'm saying, colleagues, what I remember, I think government help to change the way government works. I don't care where you go. You know, there's something called root form. There's something called root form. My son. Root form, eh? This root form.
Root form, yeah.
This thing follows, From there? 1 month! All our government to try something. We are supposed to have done a year ago is still following signature. The government has to change our work. Even to me, even with due respect, even the judicial system. You know, I've had a case being postponed in 2018 to be heard in 2019 November. Look, what has happened? The government has to change. I don't know how. I can't be. It's bad. Right? I don't know how to speak like J.J. Tower. We are in front, we're done. What we're going to do is only clause number, is that clause of independent settlement? Clause 7. You know what? I want to, as you have tea, you have your coffee. As you have your coffee, as you go to lunch, as you sit in the legislature, as you meet in the corridor, let's find one another next week on this. I don't think this is a huge issue. To me, what counts, I repeat this, let me just tell you what I will say now. Wherever I work, I always tell my kids, the costlier the risk management is, the poorer the planning is in that institution. Once you've got a lot of money, that goes to risk management, it's an expression of poor planning. Think about that. Because risk is always dealing with what is contingent, what is possible, what cannot be explained, and so on. But when plan is clear and concrete, you eliminate 50% of the cost for risk management. Think about that. The key word to me is not whether it's the minister or the parliament. The key word is what accountability mechanisms. If you are doing now, we'll be dealing with this. Actually, I want to demonstrate for this on the Children's Amendment Act. What oversight is all about. This is the biggest test to this government. That there's no way that this act would be implemented beyond November. If it means we stay here at night, we go and knock at the president's door. We knock. The key thing is accountability. Right? Oh, yes. We remember we gave a homework to lawyers on the statutory. Yes, sir. Can we take us to school? We know the questions we asked.
Yes, sir, but your question was on section 24 of the Act, which says, which establishes the Inspectorate for Social Assistance. It says that in 24.2, it says the Inspectorate functions independently of the department and the agency.
In
section 24.2, and then almost in a contradictory manner, in 24.4 it says the minister exercises final responsibility over the inspection. Yeah? And I understood that to be the committee's challenge.
Yeah.
In 24, it says...
Let me, so that we are coming to the same thing. I'm not sure what I'm saying. I remember there's one thing I have is the memory. Where I read, it is 24.4 and 24.5. 24.4 was about the final supervision, the supervision of the minister over the expatriate, and the intention of the minister to exercise the final responsibility. And 25, speak about the independence of the expatriate, why no one should have passed. I mean, 25. So what we're saying is that, what does exercise of responsibility over the inspectorate means. as a case, no one will be allowed to talk. We want you to clarify. Somebody made an attempt to bring it. Like, I think it was an attractive explanation. There's a minister of justice. The minister of justice is in charge of justice, including MPA, everyone. But the minister of justice has got no space in determining which case must go to court. But the MPA reports to the minister of justice. If it can be explained, that is the meaning here and why, that's the only thing that must satisfy. How is it? So it says the minister exercises responsibility over in a certain way. And remember what is our warrant saying, that if the inspectorate can be allowed to be second guessed by the minister, it means, in my view, the department is second guessing the inspectorate. Well, I mean, that's the minister's department. No friend, I will go there, but you know what, they don't agree with that, but they will come to you anyway. Please resolve it. We'll wait for them. Right. So, can you counsel us? Clearly, give us confidence.
As you explained, it appears to me that you covered the issue I was going to say, because the independence that is contemplated there is exactly the same in the analogy that you're giving of the Minister of Justice over, for instance, an independent institution like the NCPP under his office. He exercises final responsibility for the entire justice department, but does not interfere in the day-to-day functions of the NCPP.
I think that clarifies
it.
What it means is that the minister has a responsibility for the proper function of the inspection. The resources they require, that they are respected in the department, that they get the support they are supposed to get, but it exercises their function. The expert is no one. He doesn't say except the minister. There's no one. Can you read it at 25? There's no person. Unless you appoint the minister, it's only the minister. But it says no person. Am I right?
It says the inspector functions independently, it declares the independence.
Read it again.
It says the inspector functions independently of the department and the agency.
No, there's somewhere where 25. Where is the 25?
And therefore.
Where is 25?
Where is 25?
What? Read 25?
No person may.
Listen to that. No?
So 25 provides specifically for the question of independence. It reads, no person may in any way interfere.
In any way.
Interfere with, hinder or obstruct any member of the inspectorate in the performance of his or her function.
No person. Anyone.
Interfere.
Yes. So what I'm saying is that, can we leave it as catered for in that fashion?
Mm.
Yeah, because as I was looking in a silly way, that unless the minister is a monkey or a tiger or something like that, otherwise, it is a person, the person is where I am. Out there. I'm out of that. Well, remember, it's only clause number 7, which we're asking you try to discuss it among yourself. Unless you don't find one another by Tuesday, we'll have to take it in. But to me, this committee is able to find, if it's not, maybe it's a suit of democracy.
Mm.
I'm going to hit it because you are agreeing. fine. But I know what we're going to agree upon is how you're going to do this. But on his practical measures of running government, it should always be possible to agree. Okay. So far, thank you, Makabe. Thank you for rereading us. We're getting excited to think for the simple next to the floor. Yes, it's very much. Thank you very much. Next item?
Department,
Department. tell us, how are you doing your work? Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. We firstly want to apologize, Chairperson. We decided that we needed to add 3 slides that I would be speaking to the members have the slides.
Well,
Chair,
you see, I work underground. I struggle to hear, especially at this age. I was knocked up by a lift. It was going on a very high speed underground. So there are people who are disturbing me on my left. They are in the hallways of my head. They hold my head one day. Anyway. you see, when it comes to this area, you must know we part ways. Because this is the nub of our nation. If that word is correct. This is number, nub. Nub. Is nub correct? This is exactly the defining moment of our nation. How are you translating state resources into improved lives of people? Yeah. Then maybe you're going to get there with pathway. To me, it's just not acceptable to be told that new lives have been added. Unintentionally, it explains the serious level of attachment. Timing and seriousness. Because if you are doubling time with the seriousness which is there, we don't want to hear that. Let's hope it's the last time. Let's proceed. Yeah, Moshe Mani was still
up.
That's the reason of our existence. Is that lives of the people must change. Okay.
Chair, thanks for your understanding, the committee's understanding. Chair, we are presenting the third quarter performance for the ATT for 2019-2020. This has got about 48 targets that are put in. That is this quarter. I'm sorry, the quarter. Here we've already presented the first and the second quarter, and we are systematically addressing the issues that the committee raised during the first and second quarter. We will also indicate, Chair, what were those issues that the committee was concerned about during that time. Key to that, we acknowledge that our reporting has been based on the fact that our targets are output-based. That is, we have not been reporting on the results or change that our interventions are making. This has been clear when we were in the workshop that we organized between ourselves and the committee. Since the report that we have presented to this portfolio committee to analyze the work of the fifth administration, here we recommit ourselves to report beyond what was achieved, but on the changes we are making in community. As a result of our new plan, here, which is the MTSM 2020-2025 and the APP of 2020-2021, these are embedded in our overall impact of improving the quality of life for the poor and vulnerable. This is the impact statement that you'll find in there. We're hoping that at some point we'll be able to agree with the committee before we submit or table the first plan and the APP, we're able to do the same thing that we did before. in addition to our new plan, adopt the result-based management approach, and are informed by the seven priorities, which is the
system.
As mandated by this portfolio committee, and following, as I said, the workshop we had last year, our intervention as DFC working together in a portfolio approach with our provincial counterparts and two entities, SASA and NPA, we are also adopting the district development model in order to improve the way we work. The committee is talking about the amendment bill, spoke about how this must impact in the communities, and the district approach will help us to do that. We've also begun to work closer with the Central Drug Authority and South African Council for Social Service Professions as important partners in our portfolio.
So these are promises of the future, not today.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I must say that this has been
quite. No, they're good promises.
Yeah, this has been quite a difficult year for us as we navigate between the fifth and the sixth administration, and I think we will be quite clear with Thabane when we present. You will see the struggles that we have in terms of how we have performed. But here, that promise, I said that we wanted to directly engage because we appreciate the way the committee interrogates how we do our work. And we want, as we work in this result-based navigating towards it, we're trying to improve the way we do our work so that we were able in this meeting, if we're asked about SASA or asked about NDA, we're able to respond in a consistent way. So in quarter one and quarter two, there were issues that were raised around social security, which hindered around the foster, the social assistance amendment deal, which is what we discuss now. And we have moved quite showing what the comprehensive legal solution would look like in terms of making sure that we deal with the foster child crisis. With regards to welfare services, which is what we raised last year, sorry, in the second quarter, this was about social work scholarship. Chair, this remains a major challenge and we require your support as we continue to persuade other government departments to employ the unemployed social workers, social work crisis. And we want to emphasize this, Chair, that it's quite a difficult journey to take because even now as we are responding to the presidential emergency plan, we're able to inject about 200 social workers in that space. But we still, members would know that there are still about 5,000 social workers that are not, that have not been employed. Okay, also in order to improve our response to gender-based violence, we had a discussion between the Minister of Public Works and the Minister of Social Development, and you can see within the media there were shelters that were made available to Department of Social Development, and the official response to the Manumatche is driving that project.
What is Manumatche driving?
The issue around making sure that you remember the chair that in the committee has raised that the Commission on Gender Equality had raised that concerns around that there are just few provinces where we are visible with regards to providing shelter, and that there are about six provinces that were not invisible. So to the issue of the command center. Remember that there was an issue around the command center. There were people that came on the 30th of January 2020. Okay, with regards to foster care, there's another area that the committee raised quite forcefully. We have agreed that we'll report on agreed intervals in the committee. The next report that is due is on the 17th of which is next week of March. That will be presenting the State House with regards to foster care. The next other area was the issue around substance abuse. We have cabinet has approved the National Drug Master Plan for 2019 to 2020, and we are in the process of re-establishing the Central Drug Authority. I think the process is taking place within the committee. The other issue is with regards to the Children's Amendment Bill, which the committee is requesting, is expecting us to report on the plan today in terms of how this issue will be said, spoke about it earlier on. The other issue is with regards to the community development program, which is run by Municipale. The delays was from the SEA certification in order for us to finalize the NPO bill. This is now ready and going to go through the cluster process. And in order to make impact on our food security program here to the poor communities, we have now decentralized this function to the provinces with a budget allocation. So all of those things that we control at the national level, we have now given it to the province so that the province are able to directly run the CNCC. Tell you remember that when we came here, there was an issue around the structure of the organization, that there's no alignment and all of those. That process is under control now by the department. We have now got the GTEC assistance. They're helping us to review the organizational structure and improve our government process. This will also form the basis for alignment of our organizational structure in the sector. So we are discussing with NDA, with SASA, with the provinces, making sure that we're all aligned. The other area, Chair, was around the oversight, which is basically the last part. Whilst we are aligning the structure, we have brought this to the DG's office so that we start making sure that this oversight has been done to both SASA and NDA, and there's relative progress with regard. These are the things, Chair, that I felt that it's important for us to highlight, that these are the areas that were raised between quarter one and quarter two, and we trying to say we have not forgotten about them. We've taken the advice or the directive of the portfolio committee to make some improvements of those. I will allow Tavane to go through the actual progress with regards to quarter three. Thank you, Chair.
Let me say up front, Piggy, your opening gives hope. It felt to me as head of the institution, you applied your mind to key area for them. Whatever you do with them, at least that. That gives the impression that you are a leader who has been interacting within the class. But everybody, the devil is in the Satan is in Kukati. Satan is in Kukati. I want to hear the police call. Satan is in Kukati. Okay, okay.
Good morning, honorable members. I'll be highlighting the few areas in terms of the actual performance as a project for us to report on the third quarter. But DG has already reported the progress that we've made, which then includes some of the areas that are not going to be detailed, because he has also reported in terms of what then becomes the final performance against them. We must agree, certainly, I think, from the onset that if you compare and look at the trend in terms of our performance, there's been some challenges, and DT has already admitted in terms of our performance comparing from the first quarter until the second as well as the third. And we are hopeful that there will be improvement by the time we come to report on the fourth quarter. And I must indicate that on Monday, the department, the senior manager, we sat and went through the performance review session where we recommitted ourselves in coming up with plans and strategies in terms of how we're going to meet the targets that appear to be difficult, or those that from our observation and analysis we do not seem to meet from the first quarter, second as well as the third. And we are confident that we will come and conclude the remaining weeks of this fourth quarter. There's been substantial progress, which unfortunately will not be reflected here because we are only reporting on the third one. I'll start with the program one, which includes the administration, finance, as well as corporate services. One of the areas that we wanted to do, because this is the admin, which then provides, it enables and provides support for programs to deliver their services, is on relation to the IFST, which is an IT. In the department, in our analysis, we discovered that we've got many
things. What is
information management, the IT.
Information management.
System technology.
Okay.
Yes. So in our analysis and our target that we commitment that we made in our APP, was that we want to integrate all these main systems that are in place so that we are able to have a truth and much more improve our information, making sure that it's reliable, it's credible, and be able to assist back our services, our program partners. So one of those systems has been the accreditation intervention system, which links to the criminal justice system, so that we are able to manage better in terms of the intervention system for children in line with the Child Justice Act. All these chapter members were able to test in the province of Limpopo. Of course, our endeavors were for us to test it in the five provinces, but that work it continues to happen even as we conclude this, and if it means on the next financial year, we'll be able to go ahead. DT has reported on our effort to strengthen our capacity in terms of providing the oversight of our entities. It's been one of the areas that has been a challenge to us, and DG has reported that this capacity has been moved to office and is well capacitated with enough people and be able to finalize this, and should also be informed and enhanced with the detect process that DG is able to allude to in the opening statement. The department, through its infrastructure function, has been also having the responsibility of implementing what is called the social sector infrastructure program. And we felt, because it's been implemented that over time, we need to evaluate and see if it is and meets the objectives that it was designed to have. So the website was then designed, and it was supposed to commence in the previous mention here, but there's been revision on the scope of this work, and the consideration is that this work will not be concluded in one financial year. As a result, it will extend now to even to the outer year because of the financial implications that came as a result of our revision on the scope as well. So that work, the work that will be now undertaken about two financial years. On finance, for the department, we are expected to ensure that the compliance and also this assistance to prepare for the annual statement. We do submit on a quarterly basis our financial statements, and then of course for the third, during the third quarter we submitted our financial statement of the previous quarter, which was the second. So this is how then the performance on the problem one, which included some of the areas that have got into in terms of the IT, the M&E, entity oversight, as well as the last part, which is then the finance. Moving to social assistance, one of our functions or the key functions in this area, and the part of the work that we've done through the guidance of the portfolio committee, was to say we need to revisit what then becomes our role when we transfer this one. Then our role is clear, it's about us providing oversight on the management and administration of these payments that are towards the grants on the. So in the period under review, which is the third quarter, about 44.1 billion was transferred to SASA during this. And we provide a breakdown that demonstrates exactly.
Where are we now?
Oh, I'm sorry about that. It's on slide 12. Slide 9.
So why program 2?
Where program 2? Program 2, we talked about the social assistance of the money that we provide oversight in terms of their management and administration towards the payment of various grants. And you can see in October it was 4.6, in November 0.7, and December it was 4.6. And of course, this is because of 14, I'm sorry. 14.6. And this is due on the growing number of the beneficiaries that amongst the 18 million beneficiaries that are professional costs will be declared as well as the other person. And you must say, because part of this work is to see that not only to oversee the transfer of this money, but if this money is exactly they are reaching those that are targeted and the impact that they are making in various households. So we decided to look at some of the research that has been done, and one of them is the National Economic Dynamics Lab. And some the principal researcher, the Maria Frank, came up with this, like, we really demonstrate that these grants are internally and overall pro poor. Because if you look at these households on that slide, which the chart, you can see that on quintile 1, the larger proportion of the source of income that gets to these households is social grants. And with limited wages, which are larger, of course, if you compare with those that are in quarter price, and so forth. So it means these grants are really, really pro-poor. They are really reaching those that they need, and it means we are able to make sure that this money is exactly reached those that are deserving or those that are eligible. Now moving to program 3 on social assistance, on social security policy and administration, this is where we craft our process, our policy. I think most of the work that we wanted to do is what Ms. Fidel was able to present in terms of various pieces of policy, but those that were not reported include that we had committed ourselves during this period that we wanted to submit to the fourth cluster our policy on the material cover for retirement and disability as well as our benefits. And what we were able to do in this quarter, we were able to update this policy because we received input from the network social partners. And at the heart of this is about addressing the policy gaps which we discovered in the previous, on the previous policy, what we are addressing now. There were gaps in terms of the policy processes that have been required in this policy, and these include proposals that will create a current constitutional platform for all workers to make mandatory contribution while they are working so that they are able to receive money income on their own retirement and be able to provide for their replacement of income for themselves should they retire or should they become disabled or die. Another policy work that we were doing, and it's part of the target that we wanted to have, was to an update as well on the policy on voluntary conclusion of the informal sex sector. And these proposals are making for the creation of an effective institutional platform so that we are able to encourage informal work, informal sector workers, also for them to make voluntary contributions that will be able to protect themselves from the risk of falling into abject poverty in old, when they become older, or in the event that they die or they become disabled. Working with the committee as well, part of the way that you've been taking guidance from is how do we begin as a department to link our grant beneficiaries to other economic opportunities, or to make sure that they are able to access other government services. So there's work that you've been doing in this regard. Part of it was to come up with a discussion paper on how then to be better. And in this corner, what you wanted specifically to do was for us to do the costing exercise. Unfortunately, we could not complete it during the end of the third quarter, but this is where that we concluded the end of speaking, which is where that should be concluded by the fourth quarter, which we'll be reporting in the future. Finally, we regard to the consultations on the draft regulations to support the social assistance legislation. There's been discussions that were happening, that happened or took place during this period, which were between us as department as well as our agency, the social security agent. Moving to program four now, which is on welfare services and policies. That's where most of our work is in terms of our response, our welfare intervention to our society. The important part of the work that we've been doing and reporting on in the part of the work that came also from the fifth administration is in finalization of the white paper. I think there's lots of progress that's been recorded. I think previously we recorded in terms of the review that has happened on the current white paper of 1997. But also what we wanted to do currently was to submit it to cabinet. But unfortunately, we could not then finalize the FIAT certification process in terms of this. But also what has been happening and what we are currently doing, we have received another input from DPLE and we will be revising and make sure that they are included in the current paper and make sure that the certification processes is being prioritized. And this is our undertaking, certainly, that this will be concluded by the fourth quarter. Also, we have committed ourselves that during the third quarter, we'll be consulting the draft framework on the Social Development Bill. And these consultations are ongoing. We will be finalizing them as we end the financial year. So we could not do all of them during the third quarter, but it's work that is ongoing, and we're in consultation with the provinces to make sure that we receive their input so that we're able to finalize this transparent for the social development. When it comes to services to children, there's few pieces of work, and one of them is the Children's Amendment Bill, which we have already reported on the DG at the beginning, and the substantial process that has been done. Remember that we are having difficulties, and the minister ended up writing a letter to request that this is being prioritized, and we are happy to say that indeed it's been prioritized, and the progress is what the DG has been able to report at the beginning. We have also built capacity in some of the provinces in terms of the intersectional capacity building workshops, and these were held in Free State, in both as well as KZN. On the intersectoral protocol on the management and prevention of violence against children, child abuse, neglect, and exploitation, we were hoping to present this work in a forum led by our DG, which is the forum that constitutes all the heads of departments from the provinces. Unfortunately, this matter, when we tabled in that in the two previous meetings, it became deferred because of other pressing issues. And now, what we then decided to do was to circulate this work to all actual teams for them to provide their inputs, in hoping that in the next meeting it will be easier for us that to obtain their input and move on towards finalization. On ECD services, we are doing this so that we are able to increase access, and not just access, but to improve the quality of the early childhood development services, and that is in line with the national integrated ECD policy. What we have sought to do here was for us to come up with a best model in terms of the ECD service delivery model. So what we have done was to conduct a desktop analysis, which would be able to map, to assist us in terms of mapping up all these existing initiatives that are underway, and to be able to assist in a member to identify the gaps, the strengths and weaknesses, so that we are able to come up and see what then is the best service in Marimo Dam in terms of the ECT service. On social crime prevention, some of the issues which has already reported on in terms of the major progress, one of them is the cabinet having approved our national drug master plan. We have also made sure, Chairperson and members, that the officials that are there that are providing these services, we came and reported the first and second quarter in terms of our intentions and our DSD anti-gangster strategy, which I remember members will ask why not prioritize the Western Cape or others where they are. But we are happy to say we have noted that our officials now are able to identify the threat, the risk factors, and the general signs, and are able to provide the treatment, and who seem to have those signs or only therapy. So this intervention is really, really working in terms of responding to issues of comparison that is plaguing our schools and some of our communities. We have also been able to build capacity to some of our officials, especially those that are in public assistance abuse treatment centers. And with this training, our officials, we have been able to improve the treatment, the quality of our treatment services. And we have done this because now our services have been standardized, especially those that are related to the treatment program. The two pieces of policies that we wanted to do is related to us developing the intersectoral policy on sheltering services, and we are making headway with regard to that. We have sought the services of specialists that will assist us in terms of developing that. But another policy area as well is with regard to the handling of psychosocial services, as well as for the white paper on services. And this work will be concluded, it's going ahead, and by the time we come and report for the fourth quarter, we'll be able to report on the substantial progress that has been made with regard to that. The last two programs that fall within our target for this particular quarter is related then to issues of HIV/AIDS as part of our intervention. What we wanted to do was for us to come up to submit to the class the integrated action plan on HIV, TB, as well as STI. This could not be done because when we sat down and did analysis, we discovered that there's been issues that come to the target that most of them are unclear. And we have now decided to reduce the number of those particular indicators so that we are able to focus on key programs and have the clear target. So this work is going ahead. Could not be concluded as we anticipated, but there is progress on show. We'll be able to report on what has happened. In the province of Western Cape, we were able to conduct a capacity building on the psychosocial support services. And this is in line, chapter and members, with our efforts to reduce the HIV risk behavior and so that we're able to promote psychosocial well-being amongst targeted key populations. The final program, of course, there's been effect as well on the NMOC process, whereby the functional disability is shifted again to the Department of Youth, the Women and People with Disabilities. And then that affected some of the work that you wanted to do in that regard. For example, one of them was about for us to pilot an automated reporting system. So when this function moved to the other department, that department does not have the required IT infrastructure as we hope, and so they are able to use this automated system. So what then we are doing, we are looking for alternative tracking systems within other government departments, and currently we are engaging with the DPME because they've got this quarterly reporting system, the QPR, where we report on financial and non-financial data. So we're exploring that possibility as well as working with SSA as well. And so how then do we begin to host this within the SSA school tracking system, because they've got that particular system as well. But in other areas, the progress I will just indicate on the National Framework on Disability Rights Awareness. We are currently consolidating the input so that is finalized and be able to submit that to the Social Protection a community and human development cluster in the near future. And also, what we had hoped to finalize are the guidelines for the district and local disability inclusion arrangements. And that's what I did indicate that because we wanted to be the third quarter, and Jefferson will appreciate and recall that in November is the disability month. So most of our efforts went through us, which is what they participated as part of the campaign we can request. As a result, this then became compromised to some extent. Moving now to the program five, before I head over to my colleague who will take us to the expenditure, there are few programs and few targets and commitments that we've made. One of them is related to the EPWP, the Expanded Public Works program, and we hope to finalize all the commercial business plan and make sure that they're signed off. That process is still ongoing. Just last week, we're hosting in the department, the social sector, EPWP, with all the participating departments, and engagements are still continuing, and that will not be concluded in the period we are reporting on. However, when it comes to population and development, we as the Department of Social Development, we are leading in that space. We've been able to produce a current report on the implementation of the population policy, and we'll call this policy then it gets to be presented, and it will be chaperoned presented on the 11th BRICS meeting that will be taking place in Brazil. And also, we are also to say we have concluded the conversations with the various stakeholders on the draft report that has been produced on one of the key areas that is within the UN space on the ICTP plan. So this is a synthesis report that has been able to produce. So when it comes to our services, which is one of the direct services that we provide as the National Department regarding the MPOs, one, we were able to process all the applications for people who want to register their MPOs. We met our target beyond 99%. However, in the first and second quarter, we did indicate that we have come up with a turnaround strategy on how do we make sure that people or NPOs are able to comply in terms of submitting reports. So then as a department, we then initiated a campaign that is called Know Your NPO Status. And this has yielded positive results because if we look now at the turnaround, we are receiving more reports than we anticipated. However, that poses a challenge to us because now we are not able to process them. Well, people submit as compliance, but you need to respond to say, yes, indeed, your status is still intact, it means you are still compliant in terms of the NPO Act. So to deal with this particular challenge now of not being able to respond to that person, internally we have decided to make sure that we are redirecting the existing staff, especially those that are working as data capturers, so they are providing that particular assistance and building up the capacity within the compliance. And also, we are implementing the overtime process for officials, so that they add additional hours, so that they are able to deal with this backlog. And finally, we have added the contract staff by the quarter that we are reporting on. So we are hoping that we'll be able to deal with this backlog because currently we are sitting at 46% of the report, and yet the commitment should be at about 98%. In addition, we continue to build capacity of NPOs, making sure that we strengthen their capacity and develop them so that they are able to be accountable and remain a credible organization, and make sure that they are able to comply with the required regulations. And these were done in different provinces, including the Free State, Western Cape, Northern Cape, the Eastern Cape, Northwest, as well as the Bongo. And what has been our priority is that we need to give priority to the emerging NPOs rather than these large well-established NPOs, because those are the ones that we felt they need our intervention. One of the areas of work with NPO is about NPO funding. What we have done in the reporting period was for us to then do an evaluation of the existing settlement agreements that are there in the provinces, and this work has been concluded, and we were able at the MINMEC, which is the minister's meeting with the MECs in November, to present the policy and the NPO partnership model. community development, the industry areas before I.
I'm supposed to attend a meeting of the president of the first class. So I'll request the stock to proceed, but I just thought I need to make some few comments before I leave. I think maybe the assistance will come in your 2020-21 CPP. The problem is that, you know, I reported to people who used to say separate facts from fiction. As a lady from Botswana, I used to report to her, he said to the young man, separate facts from fiction. Because if your facts, your fact is conflicted with fiction, we don't know what are we getting. But you're not moving forward. I must just describe. Moving forward, whether you're stationary or somewhere, at least you're not moving forward. But whether you're moving forward, maybe your APP of 2020-21, let me just say to you, for instance, if you go to program one, your program one is objective there is about provision of leadership, management, support, services, social department, right? Leadership and management support services. Now, if one wants to check how has that been executed, can I say it does not? There's no effort. If I go to what you call achievement, your MST, you are telling us about what you are trying to do, right? Also, in the oversight, you said due to capacity challenges, what about this thing I came in? Has been moved to DG's, what you call office. When there is evaluation, you're telling us a fractional thing, we are saying evaluation of certain matters did not commence. Now, if program one, it's where the oversight, the leadership of the department is supposed to take place. It means where the leadership and the oversight of the department are supposed to take place are supposed to be clear goals of what we intend to turn around. This IT thing is not coming for the first time, by the way. You remember? We said to you, this integrated management system technology, you must have been having a particular problem that you want to improve. And then having analyzed that problem, and that service being executed from program one on behalf of the department, it's supposed to be saying, we are introducing IT to deal with these following problems that undermine our performance. One contractor. All what you're saying there, you're saying, accreditation division service system was tested in the Pomopo. So to ensure that DSD has reliable and stable information, one way, you know, this is a third-quarter report, eh? Yeah. Just think about that. So third quarter report, you are testing the reliability, credibility of something. And if IT is supposed to integrate, improve the performance of the department, but for us to know whether it's working or not, you must keep on saying, remember what we've done, which president the team GT have responded. We said, when you are introducing an amendment thing, you are supposed to say as to us, here is the problem currently, it is because of this clause, and because of this clause, you are unable to do A, B, C, D. And now we are introducing clause 4 to help us to A, B, C, D. You've done it now, we work together on that clause. You guys, in implementing, in putting the amendment, there's clarity, there are facts there, there's no fiction anymore. That's why we're able to do. But here, DG, let's make it. Program 1 is for the leadership of the department here. That's why clarity is supposed to be. Actually, program 1 is supposed to be a step ahead of the entire department. What is not working in any department in program 1 must be working. But after leadership, here, here, office here. Huh? If you add this up, Papa, you're in utopia. Right? So, but when you read these four areas, you are not sure exactly what's happening in program 1. Instead, you've got those, what do you call those five? I don't want to say DG. I don't want to say I hate that. I do say that. I don't want to say I hate it, but it tells me nothing. Nothing. In departments that report change, you will summarize narratives of results, achievements. Please, guys. You will summarize narratives of results, achievements. And those charts are simply the short version of what has been narrated from them. Now, here, the major thing that you are using are these charts. 62%, 61%, and if you check, you are calling this achievement. But in class level, you don't talk about achievements. But this thing is a key achievement. I don't see any achievement here. Yeah, in the whole thing. Now let's leave program 2 of putting money. But I thought, JJ, in program 2, the most important thing, for instance, the most important thing is the user-friendly of those persons. Identifying inefficiencies, programs that are in actually, because remember our interest is at the client, those, the grantees. How is this service affecting their lives and so on? It's not just the money paid, otherwise even a monkey gets done. That's what my one chap was, if your job is to cross Chipotle Street and go to post the food letter, no, an organizer was doing it. I said, in program a monkey would do that. Let's take money from the trigger, put it in the sapo, go home. There's something bigger under program 2 about the state of the lives of the people that you are pushing through. But we don't get that narrative, right? Again, you've got those impacts. Even if you get imposed, there was impact on top of something. It doesn't become an impact because you're pretending to it. Impact! No, I'm just making a side comment. Okay. You see, one other problem which I have is that are these different policies that are being done in different programs? I don't understand this. For instance, in program 3, it's a social security policy that is done there. Are we together?
Yes.
In program 3, it's a social, in program 4, it's a welfare service policy. In program 5, it's a social policy. You've got a policy brother somewhere in a different program of welfare service. You've got a policy somewhere, of social policy somewhere. You've got a social policy security somewhere. Why are you not having a unit on policy? That deals with policy. In other institutions, by the way, the policy unit will be under program one. That deals with policy. But however, what is fundamental in policy? I mean, look at everybody, you have a big policy thing all over. Every policy that is intervening in something. Welfare services were supposed to say the following challenges in the welfare area, these are the areas, these are welfare things that were challenging A, B, C, D. For these things to deliver D, we need this policy. How would you have? In the welfare service area, you can tell us, you must not assume that what is not. By welfare service, we mean the following. Areas that we're targeting are A, B, C, D. What we want to deliver in the welfare service areas is A, B, C, D. That's fine, expressing in the lives of people. But for those who happen, you need policy, so, so, so. I'm talking about policy. I think that's the way you need. It's only in UNISA where there are no courts, there are no whatever, but we discuss policy, we reach judgment. And in other universities, like that. Now, you go to find social policy. Now, what is the material distinction of these policies? Which makes certain policy to belong somewhere, another one to. And all I'm saying, DJ, I'm saying maybe your promises of 2020-21 will actually change it. I must leave you guys there, but all I want to say is if at least this time you have smaller, simplified documents, it's easier to speak to it, no matter how unhelpful it is, but at least we can say something about it. How would you get it? I'm saying this one, in the sixth administration, we have to resolve. There is no policy for the sake of policy. Policy must be responding to a situation. And I repeat that our enclosure this is that we have to find one another here. We don't have a choice right now. That when you intervene in a situation, it's because it's problematic. But the problem must be defined, must be identified. Two things you did here, and I want to say this, you did here a problem, you identify and define it. There are identified problems which are going to define. There are going to pull out everywhere. And then through your ultimate end must be clarified and your route towards the other end. And I'm saying, please. What word in Africa? What is the right word in Africa? Just come together. No. Tunadere. Okay. Samha. Versa. So, when I was taught, I thought it would be unjust for me not to make this comment. You will understand my opening remarks in this way. Let us separate facts from chance, or facts from fiction. There's a lot of fiction here. What is what fiction today is money? Money is very concrete. It's fact. But you don't know what this man is doing in this fiction. I wish we have. Please, we all love one another. I have no doubt. There are things we are loving one another already. Or, for instance, the concrete manner in which you are professing faith. Think about someone. So that we need it. You see, I'm not in charge of this institution. I get told where to go, and mine is to go there, and how high. Wait there. Good luck. Come on. You will finalize for the vision. You will finalize it. Then the members will engage in the memory and continue.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and honourable members. This is the financial statements for the department for the third quarter. So overall, the department has fairly slim in terms of its allocated budget. For the third quarter, it's 74% spending. What I want to alert the committee is that halfway in our estimates process for this financial year, there were some adjustments that were done. The first one is a declared saving of 70 million that we declared as saving as part of the social work scholarship program. Those money has been redirected to provinces. So it's because there was a number of scholarships that currently the system, there is a saving for this financial year, it's very helpful that it should be redirected. Then the whole drive in September, October last year was the GBB. We managed to reprioritize money from our transfer allocations to our goods and services. So sub 60 million was taken from our SASA administration, and also 60 million was taken from our social behavior programs, from the SUNAT allocation, which 90 million was allocated. So in total, 93 million was then redirected to the part of operational allocation, which was allocated in program 4. That's why you will see there's a slight change in our percentage spending when we look at our goods and services for the department. Next slide. There we want to see just in terms of the spending in different programs. I will come to the reasons for the different programs as we go along. So all of those programs are mostly on spending patterns, except for administration, I will get to that, and the welfare service is a little bit distorted because of the 93 million that's been allocated for the GBB program. This slide, in terms of the scale classification, our compensation of employees is fairly on track, on 70% spending. Then see the 41% spending, and don't be alarmed because of this, it's because of the 93 million. We'll come to the reasons for this underspending. Our transfers and subsidies at 75, and then CAPEX, we also got a plan to increase that spending in the fourth quarter of the financial year. The quarterly spending, as you can see, drastically picked up in terms of our goods and services. It went from 54 million in the first quarter to 88 or 89 million in the third quarter. Then in terms of the reasons, program one, you can recall in our second quarter report that we've mentioned the contract we had, the seat of our turnkey solution. I can report now we have terminated this contract with CETA. They didn't produce the goods that we intended from them in terms of the contract. So there was a 30 million as part of the baseline allocation for this purpose. So because of the contract that CETA has made with other service providers, we have ceded all these contracts to the department. So this 30 million will be partly spent for this financial year, but most of them will be going over to the next financial year. The ceding of the contract, you can see there, is only 19 million and it will be payable over two financial years, so most of that will not be paid by the end of this financial year. Then just in terms of CAPEX, My minister, the Prime Minister, has ordered two new vehicles. Both of the vehicles are now out of warranty, rolls over the mileage. So I've signed for the order last week and promised that they will have delivered the vehicles before the end of March. So there will be an increase in the spending in terms of CapEx. On social assistance, straightforward. We currently just transferring our funding in terms of the software extraction report to SASA. That's fairly on track. However, there was an amount of 250 million that approval was granted by National Police to write off debts, social assistance debts, which will be part of the 1920 financial year financials. On social security, my understanding, you know, it's just about the discussion that we had this morning about the bill that needs to be passed. So there was a huge allocation for the establishment of the inspectorate. So that's why it's not moving in terms of that. Our appeals tribunal, it's based, relates to the underspending on a consultant area for the drafting regulations that will support the bill. And as I indicated, the bill has now already been discussed, and hopeful that it will be passed and approved before the end of March 2020. Then the welfare services area, the agency with 35% spending because of this 93 million. So what we've done with this 93 million so far is that we've appointed 200 social workers. We could only appoint them the 1st of December. Because it's a national project, these 200 social workers will be employed, easily employed by the department at the end of March. So we pay for salaries and those type of benefits. But the intention is that these 200 social workers will be taken up already in the provinces as part of the provincial equitable share. It is a fair process underway for the advertisement of all these posts, and these 200 social workers on contract will have to apply to be appointed in provinces. The other portion of the allocation is that they've already identified the need to expand the number of available Kusulekans one-stop centers. We have submitted a request to National Treasury because this funding sits currently in our goods and services. So we want approval that we could appoint these six centers. And we will, once we get approval from Treasury, funding will flow to these organizations. Then just in terms of the transfers and subsidies area, most of the payments...
Can you please conclude?
Sure.
So to respect the...
I'm almost
15 minutes.
I'm almost back here. The Sonic one will be placed in the fourth quarter, the same with the 53 million for the prevention programs, and then there is an impact allocation that will also be transferred. Just in terms of ECD targets, our target was 99,000. We've achieved 97,000 Then, just lastly, on the Program 5, underspending slightly because of the youth camps, we are awaiting invoices from the Department of Defense, and there's other programs and which programs that ought to be done in the fourth quarter. And then, on transfers and subsidies, we've made a full payment to the NDA and also the full payment to the food requirement for the PFDG. That's the central chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honourable members, we are actually pressed for time.
I just wanted to just there's a social development policy that we're working on, and which is the main policy that describes the work of the department. We were thinking that this would be concluded in this financial year. It doesn't seem that we're going to do that. We would have to go through to the next, to the first quarter of the 2020-21. And the second one, Chair, is about the issue around camp sterility. Our focus there is through the child and youth camp center. That's why we are able to intervene in those spaces, and our social workers are working
short time, only there for 15 minutes. And then we still have three items on the agenda. We need to adopt the revised first term program, also need to adopt a minute which was deferred in the last portfolio committee meeting, I think 6 or 7 sets of minutes. And then also there's a DST report on a timeline on the children's amendment piece. So because we are pressed for time, I just need to make a proposal to the meeting, and I'm not sure whether I will get the support of honorable members of this. I'm proposing that we defer those set of minutes to the next portfolio committee. That's the first thing. I see honorable members are nodding. It means we can defer that one. And then we actually deal with the, we engage the presentation that was made by the department, but the 15 minutes that we have. We give over to honorable members to interact with the presentation. And then if we don't have enough time for the department to respond on the issues raised by honorable members, we'll just request them to do a written reply, a written response, and then circulate that to honorable members. I'm not sure if we are in agreement on that. Okay, no, that's fine. Okay, so,
thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the presentation. First off, I would like to say that on the slide where we speak about the declared savings and the 17 million that was redirected to provinces, I wanted to ask, would it not have been possible to, when you redirected that money to your provinces, to have asked them to ring-fence that money that you were redirecting for the absorption of social workers in the various provinces? Because the thing is, now we've already got a crisis, and we started off with the first slide, we spoke about the social work scholarship. So in other words, you identify the problem, we train people, we need social workers, they're not being absorbed by departments. But then you go and take 17 million and you redirect that to your provinces without giving conditions in terms of employing social workers. So I would really be interested to know what are these provinces doing with that 70 million, because I would have thought that we should have said we can redirect that money to the provinces, but that we ring-fence that money for the employment of social workers. And then on that point, I think at one point we will have to get to a stage, Chairperson, that we maybe call together some of the key departments, such as the education, higher education, police and others, that we engage with them. Because earlier we said that gang tourism is a huge problem within our schools. Yet, we don't have social workers at schools. But not only that, if we think back to the President Ramaphosa's emergency plan of action, which he announced on the 18th of in this house, he spoke about having offices, accessible offices at campuses where people could access social workers. So I think we actually address this with getting some of the key departments together and impressing on them how important it would be for them to absorb social workers. I don't think we'll make headway, so maybe it's a proposal for the future that we do get these stakeholders together with our own minister and that we start talking, because at the end of the day, social workers at police stations, social workers at institutions of higher learning, at schools, are very important. And I don't know why we keep on identifying it as a solution, but we're not moving forward. On the issue of the 93 million which has been reprioritized back to your TBB functions, I would like to know whether this 93 million, or whether you're going to be spending it on the employment of the 200 social workers which you employed on the 1st of December, or how will you be spending this 93 million? Because I know that also, if I go back to that emergency plan, you were given certain tasks, which were, for example, to strengthen shelter services, strengthen the call centre. So how's that money being spent? I would like to ask whether on slide, I would be interested to know, when we talk about the youth camps as well as the DSC anti-gangster strategy which was rolled out in Limpopo, do we go back and do an assessment to see whether that program has had any success? Because at the end of the day, if we start rolling out programs without going back to see whether it's actually reduced gangsterism, or whether these youth camps have actually had an effect, then, you know, we run the risk of rolling out programs simply for the sake of rolling them out and reporting about them here. So I would like to know about that. And I think for the interest of time, I've got more questions, but I'll give over to my colleagues.
Okay.
And then I'll come back.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Number two, that's Honourable Masango. I'm keeping you deliberately, Honourable Member. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Also, just in saving time, I had the same questions, some of the same questions that the Honourable Fanadeva has raised, but my question in terms of the absorption of social workers comes from what I believe was a decision to stop the actual money going towards to stop the training of social workers and use that same money to absorb them. So I would like to know if that's still the case and how is it that the DG is asking for help in terms of getting the social workers employed? Because I believe that DG said that we need assist. I just would like to know what form the assistance takes, as it were. But also, the other question, Chair, is that in this presentation, it is mentioned very clearly, and that one appreciates the way that it has been articulated, that we have a problem of drug abuse in this country. But at the same time, I don't hear anything being said about the fact that the Central Drug Authority, we don't have an active Central Drug Authority because the board's term has expired, and there was a time when I believe in August last year that there was a process of trying to make sure that the board is appointed and that the National Drug Master Plan is being finalized. I see that it has been finalized. Or something has been done here. But I'm saying, if we have such a big problem of drug abuse in the country, but the very board that should be overseeing and oversighting this whole thing is not in place and the plan has just been approved, how is that an indication of how seriously we are taking this process? And I would like to be assisted with that. And Chair, the last one, which is not the last one at all by any means, it's just that the time is out, is on the situation of the M&E that I believe is now going to be done over 2 years. I'm very keen to know, in layman's terms, why that is the case, because we have been asking, we have been promised, in fact, and we're excited about this M&E taking place and the department actually taking it, prioritizing the energy in the department. But Chair, I'll stop there and I'll probably just write questions and ask them.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. The next one, I think, is Honorable Nguyenya.
Yes, Chair, thank you very much and thank you for the presentation. Chair, because of time, I will try and be very short. My colleagues have covered me with the issue of social workers, which is a very paining situation. But in the issue of the GBV, the shelter, and where it says that the department is not visible in 6 provinces, and then there's a plan that is developed by Oman Romano, can we have details on that? Can we know what is the plan? What are the time frames? What's going to happen with the issue of these GBV shelters? What are they anticipating to do as the department? With slide 5, I do not see any improvement at all, and that says to me even the Auditor General's report is still going to be the same. We are going to expect the same report result from this department, because now if we have still have to deal with challenges of capacity, if we still have to deal with challenges of monitoring and evaluation, which are the things that came up in the last audit report, and they are still a challenge, then that says to me there will never be a change in the Auditor General's report that will be coming this financial year. on the issue of thread 16, the TPS workshop, why pilot an issue of gangsterism in a province the anti-gangsterism strategy in a province like Limpopo? I don't think Limpopo has a serious problem of gangsterism. Why not go to Western Cape, for instance? Because if you want to pilot and make sure that you are sure that your program is tried and tested, why not go to critical areas and prioritize those critical areas? The PPS version, for instance, you go to the Western Cape. I think that's the HIV issue. You should have gone to a province like KZN. So can we not look at the way we prioritize things, and so that even if we pilot programs, we make sure that we get maximum results? On the issue of persons with disabilities, the issue of women, youth, and persons with disabilities department, can we request to the committee that we have a joint meeting with them so that we find out from them what is it that they do exactly if at this time they do not have IT infrastructure that will help with such issues? What do they do exactly? So I request that we have a meeting with the first department so that they give us detailed information of what you are doing. Why initiate Know Your NPO status when infrastructure and resources are not ready yet? And people came up and submitted everything they need to submit. By the time you guys are ready, they would have been despondent and lost interest. And yet again, it would be a failed program. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I concur with all of my colleagues so far. Just two questions. With regards to specifically the policies, I feel that, and targets as well, I think it's on our page 16, which is, I think, your page 19, with regard to the HIV and TB, I just need to get to that page, the targets have not been consolidated, and the fact that we're rather prioritizing our key areas, I feel, and on my actual committee, I said, it feels to me as if we have a lot of work in progresses, and we don't have clear-cut timelines, we don't have clear-cut deadlines towards what we're working. And I want to know, and I want to find out from the department, and I think it would be good for us to, with regards to specifically these policies, also taking into account these integrated action plans on HIV, TB, and STIs that have not been consolidated yet. By when are we going to see that, and where are we in these different policy processes? And then maybe, Chairperson, just a comment on that is I'm worried that we spend 74% of our money, so we are on target in terms of spending money, but in terms of actual targets and actual performance, we are still way off. How is the department planning on actually improving that so that come the 2021 financial year, we are actually equal in terms of targets achieved and money spent? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mungai, I think you're the last one. Thanks.
I think most of my questions are also sent to the department. I want to just raise the one comment. I think that you need to revisit this equitable share of social workers, because most of the schools have collapsed because there is no social work. So I think you may think about it, because it's necessary. I stay next to the call secondary school. It's collapsing because there is no social work. We go there on every Monday to go and assist with the work, because the social worker are the ones that got know how the skill to can assist. So I was just saying, when you do all these things, look at that equitable share, because it's not benefiting. Sometimes when you take social work away, it's not needed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members, for... Oh, I did not see your hand. Okay, Honorable Member, I'm sorry.
I'm part of this committee now. Chair, thank you very much. I think I just want to comment on slide 21, the community decision development team. Chair, I think this community nutrition development program are really just a feeding program. There's no developmental goals to that programs. I would like to see the department come and give us, you know, what development programs are there, because people just go to this nutrition development because it loses the purpose of, because we create our culture of reliance on the center, and we don't develop the people that are really, you know, are in this project of participate. And then the other thing that, oh, and then the other thing what I have also seen, because I was fortunate to pilot some of this project in George when this project started. Then the other thing is also what I have seen there is that there are no, for example, that food has been stored in people's houses. There are no, you know, proper fridges to store the things that they. So I want the department to go look into those programs. Then the other thing is also on ECDs. I want to ask, is there future plans that ECD are more, to me, the educational, are more the educational program? Are there any future plans to move this ECD centers to the department of education, because it is more educational than a social one? I'm not going to speak on that one of gangsterism. And then in terms of like having capacity challenges, I've seen that you have mostly said that in terms of your entity oversight, the compliance report is removed to the list of a proper decision. But what, how will they do that? Do they see through that the challenges that they are facing?
Thank you very much, honorable members. Honorable members, I think I don't want to impose it to the meeting. So I first want to get guidance from the meeting, because we've got a few options. You can rather say, due to time constraints, the department has noted all the questions. They can either maybe do a written response, they can activate to all of us. Or if we insist we still want to be here, we want them to respond orally, they are still here, they've noted all the questions. So it's up to us. And then I'm for the idea or the proposal that we must rather agree the meeting that we allow the department to give us 10 responses. Then we can deal with the next item on the agenda for the few minutes that is left. Then we deal with the DSD, a report on 10 minutes to finalize children's amendment. I think that could take us about 5 minutes. Then we're done. Then we go to, just to adopt the first 10 program, then we call it a day. Do we agree on our amendment?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to ask you to say something. Over to you, Mungwe.
Okay, I just want to know when should we expect our written responses?
Okay. When can we expect our written responses, DG?
Next week, 10th Wednesday.
Okay, next week, Wednesday. We'll be having our 10 responses. Thanks, DG. We're now moving to the next item in our agenda, which is the DSD report on timelines to finalize children's amendment bill. I'm also going to read that, DG. Over to you, DG. Thanks.
And Chair, as we have said, we are presenting the plan to the committee as directed. We are now on the same understanding, Chair, that the bill will go back to cabinet. And going back to cabinet means that we are targeting the cabinet committee that is taking place on the 31st of March. And then we're hoping that after that we will be able to present the bill to cabinet on the 8th of April. Moving from there, Chair, that there will be processes where we would, because we've already engaged and is now a clearer understanding between ourselves and the state law advisor, that we hoping that by April we'll be able to get the certification of the bill. So that after that, the bill will go to the Speaker of National Assembly, the Chairperson of NCOP, and the Clerk of Chamber. All of those things and the introduction of the bill in Parliament will happen in April. That's what we think that will happen, and then we will work with the Secretariat in terms of making sure that the bill is processed in Parliament by the Portfolio Committee and Select Committee between May and September. Remember that the directive was that we must make sure that everything is done before October. So we're hoping that the promulgation of the bill will take place on October by the President, and then in November we're able to take through the implementation of the Amendment Act. So that's the plan that I want to respond
to. Thank you very much, DG, for this report or plan that you are planning to the Portfolio Committee. Honorable members, a briefing from the department around the Children's Amendment Bill. I've noted only one hand from Honorable van der Merwe and Honorable Abrahams and Masangu. Can you please be brief as possible, honorable members? I know sometimes you don't like to be surprised, you want to engage on issues. Can you please be brief, because we've really been out of time. So I'm only noting that we have any gift to the DG to clarify, then we move to the next item. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the report is, thanks to the DG for the report. My only concern is the time frames are very tight, and the fact of the matter is there's no plan B there. It says we either, either we make it or we don't make it, but the problem is we often see in Parliament processes take much longer than envisaged. So I really feel that, it's really, this is sort of a cliffhanger, because we go into recess now, you might even find that the bill won't get through its processes, they are in niggles. So I'm really just concerned about the time frame, because we've got no other way, it must be ready in part by November, so, and there's no plan B. So that for me is of concern. But hoping that it's not a concern that will actually materialise. But the time frames are very tight.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Previously, the council was criticised for not allowing enough time or giving short notice for public participation and comment. Where in this plan will that public participation comment be, and for how long?
I'm not sure. I think the public participation does under correction in this part, but I need to clarify it. Honorable Masangu?
Thank you, Chair. It's been covered.
Okay. Honorable Ivana?
No.
We have the other one.
I think that you are saying basically.
Okay.
It's going to come to us. But what is the concern in a short period of time?
Okay.
That is the concern. Yeah. It might also be not an issue like that.
Okay, can we give to the digital by over to the
Thank you. We were trying to make sure that this whole process is concluded by September. We're giving all months for this process between when we submit it to the process of Parliament. So all of that will take 4 months, and we think that it's enough time. We can take less than that. But it's up to the committee, because it's beyond our control to control that space. But I wanted to make sure that it gets to cabinet and it's taken with the speaker and the NCOP and so on and so forth.
Now, thanks, DG. the public participation issue, what are you saying about it? Can you just comment on that?
Thanks, Honourable Chair and members. As far as the department is concerned, we have completed that process, including when we did the gazetting for 30 days, that was concluded.
Yes.
Now, ours is to table the DMA.
Yes.
So as far as the committee, how they do public hearings, with what time frame, as DG has indicated, we allocated 4 months to the court date of November. So it's up to the committee on how they want to do public participation.
Thank you very much for that clarity. I think we can now release the department. Thank you very much, Lizzie and the team of officials for coming today, for coming to them to us. We really appreciate it. But from the side of the honorable members, we just need 5 minutes to adopt the necessary programs. Please, honorable members. So while the department will be going out of the way, we have over to our secretary.